Welcome to Real Time Real Talk, a Dexcom podcast dedicated to pharmacists and other healthcare professionals on the front lines helping people thrive who live with diabetes.
It's a very modern device. It has a touch screen. It has an IPX8 water resistance rating. It charges with a Qi charger, so it doesn't plug into anything.
Dexcom is the leading developer of real-time continuous glucose monitoring.
Almost identical to what the Search for Diabetes in Youth study found is the population with type 1 in the U.S. 27% of kids with type 1 in the U.S. are a minority race and ethnicity, so we were able to match that, and we were really proud of that.
For more information on all Dexcom technologies, please visit Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Real Time Real Talk. I am your host, Cher Pastore. In today's episode, we are recording live from ADA, the American Diabetes Association Conference, which is held this year in San Diego. And in this episode, we are going to be discussing a revolutionary automated insulin delivery system that has been years in the making. And we have the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Stephen Russell, here with us today. Welcome, Dr. Russell.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. So tell us a little bit more just about yourself and how you became interested in diabetes and what you're passionate about in the field.
Well, I'm an adult endocrinologist. I've been working in the field for about 20 years. And I trained in Texas and then came up to Mass General Hospital, did my residency and fellowship there. And I was working at the Joslin Diabetes Center doing some research there when I met my collaborator at Damiano. He came to the Joslin to give a talk about some work he was doing trying to automate the control of glucose in diabetes. At that point, I was an endocrine fellow doing my research and already very interested in diabetes. And I was very excited by the approach that he was working on and approached him and said, I'd really like to collaborate with you to bring this work that he was doing in a pig model, bring it to humans. That was in 2006. And we did our first human study with the bionic pancreas algorithms in 2008. And we've been collaborating ever since.
Okay, and do you feel comfortable telling us a little bit about Dr. Damiano's story and how he came to be very interested? I think, does he have a son with type 1?
He does have a son with type 1. His son was diagnosed with type 1 at 11 months of age. Ed is an applied mathematician, and he and his wife, who's a pediatrician who diagnosed his son, David, they worked really hard to control his blood glucose, and they were really a lot on their own. You know, there wasn't a lot of resources for treating an 11-month-old with type 1 diabetes, so they really had to find their own way. Ed describes being up every hour or two all night long, and I think he just felt there had to be a better way, and he could use his applied mathematical skills to develop algorithms to do this thing that he was doing and his wife was doing for his son. And they started working on that, had a graduate student that came to work with him on it, and they developed these algorithms and were doing these studies in a pig model when I met them. And the algorithms were already well on their way, and then we developed them further over the next 20 clinical trials that we did and optimized those algorithms, and that's what ultimately went into the pivotal trial and is now available.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that. So tell our listeners about Beta Bionics, and you know, we have listeners from all over the world, so there are definitely some people who haven't even heard of it, and likely even people in this country. So tell everybody just a little bit more about Beta Bionics and your product.
So Beta Bionics was founded in 2015 explicitly to take these algorithms that we had developed in the academic space and commercialize them. It's a public benefit corporation, so it was explicitly founded in a way that its focus was going to be on a benefit to people with type 1 diabetes. And I think originally Ed thought that Beta Bionics would develop these algorithms and then maybe license them, but it became clear that it was going to be necessary for Beta Bionics to do everything. So Beta Bionics has developed the platform, further developed the algorithms, ran the pivotal trials, and has also developed all the infrastructure and the support and manufacturing. And so it's really something unprecedented for a little company to be doing because, you know, all the other legacy manufacturers, if you will, of pump companies that brought in some degree of automation, they already had all of that infrastructure built, and they already had an installed base, and then they were adding a degree of automation. Beta Bionics is kind of doing that all at once, all from scratch. It was quite a task, quite a lift.
I know.
But we're really excited that we're to this point.
And tell us, is it an iPhone? Is it the pump itself? Or it's not a pump, it's an automated insulin delivery system?
That's right.
And tell us about like the components.
Right. So the iLet is an automated insulin delivery system, but it's not a hybrid closed loop system that all of the other AID systems on the market are. And that's because it's not a hybrid closed loop system. The system itself makes all of the decisions about insulin dosing. It determines every single dose. But let's talk about the platform a little bit. So it's a purpose-built device that takes a glucose signal from a Dexcom G6, and that glucose signal is used by three different algorithms inside the iLet to make decisions about insulin dosing. Then those doses are delivered through a pumping function, and the system can also communicate with a smartphone, and that smartphone isn't required for its function, but if it's linked to our app on a smartphone, it will send the information from the iLet to the cloud every 3 hours, and then it can be accessed by healthcare provider.
The data can be accessed.
Yeah, all the data for the patient can be accessed through the cloud.
But any functionality that the person wearing the system would do is on the pump itself or the device.
Everything is on the pump, even initializing a new sensor.
Okay.
All of the decision making is done on the pump. And it's a very modern device. It has a touch screen. It has an IPX8 water resistance rating. It charges with a Qi charger, so it doesn't plug into anything. Yeah, it has a really appealing interface,
okay. And
it's a very simple interface. And that's because, as I mentioned, the algorithms make all the insulin dosing decisions. So it has three different algorithms.
Okay.
It's got a basal algorithm, a corrections algorithm, and a meal dose algorithm.
Okay.
And the basal algorithm starts, the system is initialized just with the body weight. Only one number to initialize it. There's no basal profile, there's no carb ratio, there's no sensitivity factor.
Okay.
It's just initialized with the user's weight. And then it starts adapting online immediately as soon as it's started. There's no run-in period. Our glucose control is automated immediately.
Okay.
And then it adapts to their individual insulin needs.
Okay.
And the basal adapts on several different time scales. It's adapting in the immediately in response to changes in glucose, but it also adapts on a diurnal sense. So if the glucose is always a little bit higher, there's a more of an insulin need at a certain time of the day, it does learn that. Then there's the corrections algorithm, and that provides additional insulin if the basal algorithm
isn't bringing the glucose down enough.
Isn't sufficient to bring the glucose into range.
Okay.
And again, that is fully automated. There's no need for the user, and in fact, no way for the user to give a correction. All of that's completely automated.
So I think that is a really important point to note, because I would say that is very different than any system currently available, right?
That's right.
In the studies, had anyone found it hard to give up control, or how did that go?
I think some people did find it initially difficult to give up control.
Okay.
And before I even talk about that, I just want to mention one other thing, and that is that in addition to corrections, the iLet determines all the meal insulin as well. And so the iLet is very unique in that there's no carb counting. The way that a meal is announced is to announce the meal as breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Okay.
And snacks can be announced as one of those types of meals too if they have sufficient amount of carbs. And the user just calls the meal usual for me, more or less. And most meals should be usual for me. And the meals adapt independently of each other. So breakfast, lunch, and dinner adapt independently. What the system does is it keeps track of how much correction insulin is given. The first meal dose is just based on weight and it's conservative. And then the corrections controller comes in and gives additional insulin. The system keeps track of how much correction insulin it gives over the next 4 hours. So the next time you have a breakfast that's usual for me, the iLet has an idea of how much insulin you need and it will give 75% of the predicted amount. And that continues to adapt over the life of the use of the iLet. And so the user doesn't have to carb count. They do need to be carb aware, we say. They need to know what carbs are,
okay, as
opposed to fat or protein. And they need to be able to look at a plate and say, yeah, that's about my usual amount of carbs. But then the system determines the size of the dose.
So what's the advantage then of announcing a meal is it telling the algorithm something such, like, is it one of the three algorithms that's then doing something different?
Right. So the meal dose algorithm is then giving 75% of the insulin it predicts you're going to need for that meal up front. And so giving that insulin before the meal, it's going to reduce the size of the glucose excursion after the meal.
Okay.
And if they forget, we'd say if you've forgotten to announce, but you remember within 30 minutes of starting to eat or before your glucose starts rising from the meal, you can then announce. After that point, you shouldn't announce the meal. You should just let the corrections controller take care of it. The controller will have started giving insulin at that point. You don't want to stack insulin.
Right.
But the point is that by giving a little bit of that insulin up front, you're going to get better glucose control.
Okay. And what about then, would there be ever a need to like pre-bolus or not really?
We do not recommend pre-bolusing.
Okay.
For what we think are obvious reasons, if you announce a meal and then life intervenes and you don't get a chance to eat, then there's a real risk of severe hypoglycemia because the controller has given you 75% of the predicted insulin for that meal and you don't eat. So we don't recommend that. And it's not necessary to achieve good glucose control with the iLet. So what we recommend is that people announce that meal when they got the meal in front of them, they're about to eat.
And, you know, I think that that's really important to tell our listeners because it's really kind of like a big change in how we manage diabetes. So first of all, I'm a dietitian by heart and by training. And, you know, carb counting was like the bane of my existence, right? And people living with type 1 diabetes also hate it. So
I think it's the bane of a lot of people's existence with type 1 and the, you know, healthcare providers who are trying to help them because it's really, really hard to accurately carb count. I mean, it's almost a fiction, honestly.
Yeah, I know. And I studied nutrition and it was like disappointing. I'm like, how can this be so far off? But yeah, so I find that particularly, you know, that will be a big change. And then also the pre-bolusing, I know a lot of people pre-bolus. So I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, different and hopefully much less work that the person has to do, but just a little bit of a shift. So I think they have to know about it. They have to know the different systems and then let it work.
That's right. It really is very, very different. And you asked, did some people have trouble letting go? And now that we've talked about all of the features or most of the features of the iLet, what makes it different, I think we can talk about that. So it really is difficult in the beginning for some people to give up that control. They have developed these skills that are really survival skills for them living with diabetes. I mean, diabetes is fundamentally different from any other chronic condition in that the person with diabetes is put on the spot of having to determine the dose of insulin, which is a really powerful and potentially dangerous drug, multiple times a day. That is crazy. There is no other medical condition where we give them a powerful drug and we say, but you figure out how much to take. 5 times, 6 times, 10 times a day. So that's really different. So understandably, people have really invested a lot of energy in trying to figure out how am I going to do this? So giving that up is hard sometimes initially, but if they're willing to give the iLet a chance to do its thing, they see that their glucose control is good. And this whole new world opens up to them of maybe I don't have to spend so much of my mental energy focused on diabetes. People just realize, you know, how burnt out they are, you know, when an alternative presents itself. I don't have to take all these correction boluses. I don't have to think about carb counting. I can just let this device take care of my diabetes.
Yeah.
You still have to do the care and feeding. You still have to make sure it's got insulin cartridge.
Is it the same every 3 days? Do you have to change?
That's right. We have a glass cartridge.
Okay.
And that glass cartridge holds 180 units of insulin. So for most people, they can still get 3 days out of that. If they have really high insulin requirements, they might need to change it more often.
Okay.
But changing that cartridge is very, very fast.
Okay,
once you have a cartridge in your hand, it takes less than 60 seconds to change it. So that's something that can happen pretty quickly. You need to make sure your infusion set is working. Just like any other insulin delivery method, the challenge that we all still have is that infusion sets fail. So you still have to keep a lookout for a failed infusion set and be willing to replace one if it fails.
Okay.
You got to make sure it's charged.
We have to make sure the G6 is there. Dexcom G6.
That's right. You got to have a working sensor.
Yep.
And if it fails or it ends, you got to put another one on right away because the system's really designed to work best with CGM input. And you have to charge it. And I mentioned that you just put it on a charging pad. It only takes 15 minutes a day, so we recommend people just put it on the charging pad when they get in the shower and then hook back up at the end, and that'll keep the battery topped off. So they do have to do some things. It's not like they can totally forget about diabetes.
But it's almost like they do like whatever they do with their cell phone. You know?
That's right. That's yeah. right. But the mental energy goes away, and the iLet is making a new insulin dosing decision every 5 minutes around the clock.
Good.
And it is constantly adapting to their changing insulin needs. And instead of having these parameters like carb ratio, sensitivity factor, basal rate profile that have to be updated constantly as their needs change, and usually are only updated every 3 months or so, it's every 6 months
right.
when they
right.
come to see a healthcare professional, and may, you know, sometime in the middle of that 3 or 6 month period, their needs may change, and they may change back
right.
again. And
but now with the iLet, we don't have to do any of that. We
don't have to do any of that. It's constantly adapting to their insulin needs. And if we get a chance to talk about the pivotal data, we have evidence that that adaptation is very, very fast, within 24 to 48 hours.
Oh, good. Yeah, I do want to talk about that. But before I talk about that, I want to mention that I think it's so important. One thing that I found particularly frustrating, and I think people living with type 1 diabetes also find frustrating, is that the person could do almost the same thing every day, right? Like eat the same meal or be in their office and have a particularly different outcome, right?
That's absolutely true. And it's very
and
frustrating.
I feel like that was the most frustrating thing. And it sounds like the system maybe could alleviate some of that.
Absolutely. That's true. So what we've found both in the pre-pivotal studies and the pivotal studies is that the iLet brings a person into their new average glucose or their new time in range very, very quickly. And then it keeps them there very, very consistently over 13 weeks is how long we had the pivotal study. Because as your needs change, the system is adapting to those changes in real time. So with most diabetes technologies, what you see is that the person's insulin needs change, their average glucose changes, the amount of hypoglycemia changes, the amount of insulin doesn't change very much. With automated systems, and especially with the iLet, their glucose control stays the same and the amount of insulin they're getting changes a lot from day to day as their needs change. And you know, people get into habits of how much insulin they're going to take for their meals and, you know, when they're going to do corrections. And unfortunately, it's very unpredictable what their insulin needs are going to be.
Right.
And so even if they're really on top of it and they're paying a lot of attention to their diabetes, they're thinking about it 10, 15 times a day, that can't hold a candle to a system that is thinking about it 288 times a day, every 5 minutes, and constantly adjusting to their
right.
ever-changing needs. And so that's what the iLet offers.
And it's a single hormone system, right?
It is a single hormone okay. system. It uses insulin.
Okay.
We are currently approved for Humalog, Novolog, and Faster Insulin Aspart, or FIASP.
And what ages?
Age 6 and up.
Okay.
So 6 to no upper limit. And the iLet is approved for type 1 diabetes, indicated for type 1 diabetes. We are working on studies to look at it for other indications, not indicated for those yet.
Okay.
But we've done some pre-pivotal studies in type 2 diabetes, in cystic fibrosis-related diabetes, and we're really excited about moving forward with those as well.
This just came to my mind, and I was wondering, so I went to a presentation yesterday, because I mentioned we're at the American Diabetes Association conference, and it was about essentially steroids, and then the person would take steroids and their glucose would just have an unfortunate response.
Yes.
So do we know what would happen in this particular case using the iLet if a person was to be on steroids or something like that?
Well, we haven't specifically studied that, but what I can tell you is that when we put the iLet on somebody and initialize it just with their weight, it will bring them into their new time in range. And on average, we saw the time in range increase about 2.5 to 3 hours a day with the iLet. It does that within 24 to 48 hours. About 80% of the improvement occurs within the first 24 hours, and then the last 20% of the improvement occurs in the second 24 hours. So what that means is the iLet can take somebody it doesn't know anything about except their weight, and we start off dosing very conservatively, and it can ramp up the insulin dosing and time the insulin dosing to bring them into range that quickly. But what that also means is if their insulin needs change, for any reason, you could imagine an adolescent goes through a growth spurt and they've got a lot more growth hormone coursing through their body, or an adult gets into a patch of poison ivy and has to take a prednisone tape, so their insulin needs all of a sudden increase. Well, the islet is constantly adapting, and so it can adapt to that new insulin need just as fast as it adapted to the new person that it didn't know anything about except their weight.
And then similarly, on the way down.
On the way down, if their insulin needs are reduced, the islet will reduce those needs. So what it's doing is it's adapting to their needs in the moment. It does take into account the recent history. The day before, it's weighted most heavily, a little less the day before that, and so on. And then information older than a week old is just forgotten by the islet. So it's constantly learning the now for that person, constantly learning what their insulin needs are today and responding to that.
Unbelievable. Okay, so now let's talk about the pivotal trial results. Tell us about it. So it was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, right, in September of this year?
That's right. And on the same day, we published four additional papers in Diabetes Technology and Therapeutics. So the primary analysis for the pivotal study was in adults and kids using Humalog and Novolog. Then we also did additional analyses that we pre-planned in just the kids, 6 through under 18, in adults, 18 through whatever age. We also had an additional analysis on adults using faster insulin aspart. And then we had a fourth paper, this was a randomized controlled trial, as we talk in a moment, people who are randomized to the standard of care group, we wanted them to have a chance to use the islet too. So after they completed their randomized control trial portion of the study, they had the option to use the islet. So most of them went on to use it for another 3 months. And then we compared their results during those 3 months to their 3 months in the control arm of the trial. And those results were very, very similar to the results from comparing the control arm to the islet arm in the RCT. So we published those as well.
What was the sample size for the RCT?
So this was a very large trial. This was a randomized control trial of 440 participants, by far the largest trial of an AID, a pivotal trial of an AID system ever conducted.
And it was 13 weeks?
It was 13 weeks. So the trial design was the following. People could participate in the trial if they had type 1 diabetes for at least a year and they were at least 6 years of age. And they were allowed to be in the trial if they used any method of insulin delivery, including, and this is a first for any trial of this sort, hybrid closed loop systems. And then we randomized them to either use the islet or to continue using their own therapy, including hybrid closed loop systems. And the only difference was that if they weren't using a CGM, we feel that the use of CGM really is standard of care for diabetes. So everyone in the study was, if they hadn't already used it, was trained to use the Dexcom G6. And so about 88% of the people were already using some kind of CGM, not necessarily Dexcom. And for those that weren't using one, we trained them to use it. For those that are already using a CGM, we still provided them with the Dexcom G6 because we wanted everyone in the study to be using the same CGM so that the results were comparable across the arms. And in terms of recruiting, we really thought it was important for our study population to be representative of the people in the U.S. who have type 1 diabetes. And previous studies have tended to be overwhelmingly white, highly educated, and very well off financially. And we know that that's not really representative of the population of people with type 1. It tends to be the population we're exposed to in our ivory tower of academia and industry, but that's not really representative. So we really wanted to have a representative population. So we picked 16 study sites around the U.S. in part because the investigators at those sites were terrific, but also because they could recruit a population that looks like America that has type 1. So we had goals for recruiting people with minority race and ethnicity. We had goals for recruitment of people in terms of glycemic control. One of the things that's really tragic and scary about type 1 in the U.S. is that only 20% of people meet the glycemic goals that we know from the diabetes control and complication trials are important to reduce the risk of complications. Only 20% of people in the U.S. have an A1C less than 7%. So we said we don't want more than 20% of people in our trial to have an A1C under 7%. And importantly, we had no upper limit on A1C. Most trials exclude people with really, really high A1Cs because the thought is, they're not going to participate in the trial. They're not really taking insulin. They're not going to really be good study subjects. And we really wanted to stand that assumption on its head, because those people, we think, are just not being served by the technologies that they have available. We thought that those people, if we give them something much more automated, they will be engaged, and they are the ones who need this the most. So we don't want to exclude them. And we also didn't exclude people who had a recent history of severe hypoglycemia or hypoglycemia unawareness or a recent history of DKA or a recent history of hospitalization due to out-of-control diabetes. And those people have been excluded from all of the other trials. So we wanted to have a much more inclusive study population. And we were successful. We recruited a population that had 26% minority race or ethnicity, and that is almost identical to what the Search for Diabetes in Youth study found is the population with type 1 in the U.S. 27% of kids with type 1 in the U.S. are of minority race and ethnicity. So we were able to match that, and we were really proud of that.
And what were some of the high-level results?
First of all, I just need to explain the study design a little bit. So we collected 2 weeks of data with the Dexcom G6, and then we randomized them to either be on the iLet or their standard of care. And then they were in the study for 13 weeks. We looked at A1C at baseline at 6 weeks and at 13 weeks. And A1C was our primary outcome. And we also looked at time less than 54 and time in range and average glucose. I want to make one other point about the way that the study was conducted. They came in, we trained them in about 2 hours to use the iLet, and then we entered their weight, and then we pressed Go Bionic, and they were in automated glucose control from that point on. They went home. We had a phone call at 2 days and at 7 days. We had study visits at 2 weeks and 6 weeks, but most of those were done virtually because of COVID. And then they came back at 13 weeks. We weren't adjusting their parameters every week like has been done in many other studies, because there's no parameters to adjust.
At the study visits, what did happen?
Just a conversation. Sometimes we would adjust their glucose target, and that's the only setting that you can change on the iLet. We have a glucose target of usual, which most people are on.
Okay.
Higher or lower.
Okay,
that is the only that's the only setting.
So it's not like sleep mode and activity mode.
That's
it's
right.
Just
You can choose two different targets during the day. So you can have one target during the daytime, one target at night if you want. The start and stop times are totally customizable. So you can do that. And then we would also potentially talk to them about their meal announcements. You know, just make sure that they understood the goal. You know, most of your meals are supposed to be usual for me.
Okay.
You should be announcing snacks if they have as many carbs as a meal. Things like that. Just checking in with them,
okay,
giving them some extra supplies. Send them on their way. So at the end of 13 weeks, our primary outcome was A1C. And what we found is in kids and adults, we found that the average reduction of A1C was 0.5 percentage points. So overall, in the population at large, we reduced their A1C by 0.5%. But really importantly, people with very high A1Cs had much larger reductions. So for instance, people who had an A1C above 9 had an average reduction of their A1C of 1.7 percentage points. People had an A1C of 7, and I told you that was most of our cohort, they had a reduction of 0.7 percentage points. And people who had an A1C below 7 at the beginning had no change in their A1C. They were already meeting their goal for therapy. The iLet just kept them there with much less work. But people who had these really high A1Cs needed help, they saw very large reductions of their A1C.
Okay, I have two questions, and just one important point. I'm glad that you mentioned that, right? Because if they went from an 11 to a 10.5, well, that wouldn't have been ideal. So, good. Now, what happens if there are people who want to be less than a 7? Like, what if they want to be a 6 or a 6.5 A1C? Would this system work for them, or?
It may well work for them. It depends a little bit on where they start. As I mentioned, people who already have an A1C below 7 tend to stay below 7. People who have an A1C above 7 see, as I mentioned, very large reductions of their A1C. And in many cases, they come below 7. About half of our entire cohort had an A1C below 7 at the end. The other half that had an A1C above 7, about 80% of them had an A1C between 7 and 7.5. And then the remainder, a small number, had A1Cs above 8.5. And I think that, you know, the iLet is determining all the insulin dosing. Probably what makes a difference for where you wind up is the amount of carbs that you eat. That still has a role. So the iLet is dosing for, it's learning how many carbs you eat, but it's just inevitable that people who eat much larger amounts of carbs tend to get a slightly higher average glucose. And people who exercise more tend to be able to get a little bit better A1C. So I think thinking about what a provider would work with on a visit with somebody on an iLet, they're not going to spend any time twiddling knobs and adjusting parameters and so forth, but they can talk about these other things that matter, like lifestyle, like diet, and so forth. So I think those are the kind of things that make a big difference. But you ask about the reductions. I mean, we saw some really dramatic reductions. We had our highest A1C in the trial. Again, this is an N of one, but it was our highest A1C. At baseline, the A1C was 14.9%. And at 13 weeks, the A1C was 6.8%. So a reduction of more than 8 percentage points in A1C. So that is really unprecedented, I think. I mean, that is a large reduction of A1C. And of course, you know, that person was not taking enough insulin, of course. And so the
but
why?
I mean,
there's barriers to doing that, right? And so the iLet made it easy for them to get the insulin they needed and, you know, show that there was nothing intrinsically, physiologically challenging about their diabetes, but nonetheless, they weren't able to do it with the tools that they previously had.
Yep.
But with the iLet as a tool, they were able to be really successful and get to the kind of glucose control that they wanted to have.
Hopefully they weren't previously on a G6 also with a 14% A1C.
They weren't. As a matter of fact, they were on MDI without a CGM, a young adult. And that was a really inspiring story for us.
But it'll be interesting to see now as it becomes available, more commercially available, which we are going to talk about, you know, then after a year, we'll have the real world evidence and then we can report out on those trials.
That's absolutely right. One of the first people that we started on the iLet commercially had an A1C of 15. And when they came in to be trained, their Dexcom G6 just read high.
So that means it's above 400 milligrams per deciliter, in case people don't know that.
And once they were started on the iLet, you could see that their glucose was coming down. And on day two, their time in range was 65%.
Oh, wow.
And the iLet is still learning them. So.
Okay, and do you want to tell us about the outcomes for time less than 54 in time in range?
Yes, I'd love to. So obviously, we're getting big reductions of A1C. That's very exciting. But it's really important that we're not doing that at the expense of increasing time less than 54. People in our trial at baseline had very low amounts of hypoglycemia, 0.2% on average at baseline. That's in that two-week period, very low, well below the 1% that's recommended by the ADA. In both arms, there was a small increase in the time less than 54 to about 0.3%. Again, still very low, still well below the time that's recommended by the ADA. And it was the same in both groups, probably some regression to the mean from that two-week period. But when you looked at the baseline adjusted difference, it was 0.00%. So no difference in time less than 54, despite those large reductions of A1C. And that was also true for time less than 70, no change in time less than 70.
Okay.
So the iLet is able to safely lower A1C and mean glucose reduction about 16 milligrams per deciliter on average without increasing hypoglycemia.
Okay.
And in terms of time in range, I told you already we had about 2.6 to 3.1 hours a day increased time in range, which is great. And that was a little bit higher in the FIASP group. That was the one difference we saw with faster insulin aspart. We saw about 3% increased time in range compared to Humalog and Novolog. So 3.1 hours a day instead of 2.6 hours a day. We didn't see changes or differences between the two groups in terms of A1C, time less than 54, but we did see this little increase in time in range. So that was cool. But the thing that was really striking about those time in range results is how fast they came to the new time in range. So as I mentioned, they got 80% of that increase in the first 24 hours on average, and 100% of the increase they were ultimately going to have in by the first 48 hours. And then they stayed there for 13 weeks. And so what's so exciting about that is that tells you how fast the iLet is adapting to their individual needs. Now, that's mainly adaptation of the basal profile and of the corrections algorithm. It takes a little longer than that usually to fully adapt the meal doses. And then as the meal doses adapt, the islet is able to back off a little bit with the corrections insulin, and more of the insulin is coming from the meal controller. Yeah. But it takes a little longer to learn because it only gets a few chances to learn a day, whereas the corrections controller and the basal controller are learning 288 times a day.
Okay, and did you look at what happens during exercise? Do we know, or not yet?
So we didn't specifically look at what happens during exercise. We encourage people to just live their life and do everything that they were ordinarily going to do. Okay. But because we didn't want to interfere with their life, we didn't ask them to keep any kind of diaries about the time they were doing exercise or diaries about what they were eating. So we can't make any statements about the way that it performed around exercise.
Do you think that you would do any studies in that? Just, I'm only asking because I know that it's so hard. I don't have type 1 myself, but I have so many friends and former patients with type 1. And they would always say that that was so hard to control, even on a different system, when they were exercised. And then, you know, people would say, well, if it's planned. But the person was like, well, I don't know, I didn't plan it. So
that's right.
Do you think we'd maybe do some studies there?
Exercise is a really big challenge for any single hormone system, including ours, because the islet, when it sees the glucose dropping, if exercise causes the blood glucose to drop, will of course suspend insulin delivery. But insulin is relatively slowly absorbed. Even the rapid-acting insulins that we have still take an hour or more on average to peak in blood. So if you stop insulin delivery, the insulin you just gave is still on board. It's going to take an hour to peak. It's going to take even longer to disappear. So that is a fundamental challenge that all of these systems have. And that's one of the reasons why we are so excited about continuing with our bi-hormonal islet. So as many people probably know, we've been working on the bi-hormonal islet even longer than we were working on the insulin delivering islet, the single hormone islet. But it became clear that we would be able to get the single hormone islet out there earlier, and I've told you about the results. We think they're really transformational. They really are going to make a difference for a lot of people with diabetes, so we didn't want to wait on that. We didn't want to wait for the ultimate bi-hormonal islet to get it out there, but we are still very, very excited about moving forward, and we're planning a pivotal trial that we hope to start sometime this year or maybe early next year. And that bi-hormonal islet is really the answer to exercise, because when the suspension of insulin delivery isn't enough, we're able to deliver microdoses of glucagon, and that glucagon acts on the liver to block the effects of insulin and to even make the liver break down glycogen and release glucose into the bloodstream. So you've stored glucose in your liver. It's waiting there for glucagon to go get it. But in type 1 diabetes, glucagon doesn't do that anymore. Those cells, those glucagon-producing cells are there, but in the absence of the insulin-producing islet cells, they don't know what to do anymore. So you no longer have this glucagon response to hypoglycemia. So what we're trying to do is mimic that response by giving little microdoses of glucagon. And so when insulin delivery suspension is enough, you give these little doses of glucagon, and that's usually enough to prevent that hypoglycemia. And so that allows people to have spontaneity. You said, I didn't plan the exercise. Of course, most people, I mean, sometimes you do, but sometimes you don't.
Right.
Sometimes you don't have a choice. If you're running for a bus, you didn't plan your exercise.
Right.
So having another hormone, glucagon in this case, to be able to come in and dose and block that hypoglycemia occurring without any input or need for the person with diabetes to deal with it, that's huge. And that also allows us to be more aggressive with insulin dosing than we can be safely with the single hormone islet. So based on our pre-pivotal studies, which by the way, were extremely predictive of the results we got for the single hormone islet, we predicted them with almost to the milligram per deciliter in terms of mean glucose and the amount of hypoglycemia. So we also have a lot of pre-pivotal studies with the bi-hormonal islet. We predict that 0.5% A1C reduction we get with the single hormone islet, we'll get another 0.5%. So on average, we'll get a full 1% reduction.
Right.
And at the same time, we think we'll also reduce hypoglycemia rather than just not increase it. But I like to think about this from the public health standpoint. With the single hormone islet, we can get about half of the people to have an A1C less than 7%. Almost all the remainder close to that, but still only about half of them reaching the A1C of less than 7%, which is great compared to the 20% we have now. Yeah. That's fantastic. But with the bihormonal islet, our pre-pivotal studies suggest we're going to get 90% of people to have an A1C less than 7%, and all of the remainder would have an A1C less than 7.5. So that, to me, is really transformational.
Yes.
You know, lowering an individual person's A1C by another 0.5%, that's great.
Yeah.
But being able to look at the population of people with diabetes and say, we're going to get them all into a range where we're going to reduce to the minimum their risk for long-term complications.
Right.
That's what really, to me, is the promise of the bihormonal islet, in addition to the increased spontaneity of life and not having...
Making it much easier. Yeah.
Exactly.
And, right, and so not only just lowering the A1C, but hopefully decreasing time in hypo and increasing time in range. And so
that's right.
And we'll make it clear again that, of course, that's not ready yet and it's not out and it's currently only insulin, but hopefully it will be out sometime in the near future.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've gotten past a lot of barriers that were in the way of doing that. So this hardware, the islet hardware, right now it's on the market in this single hormone, but it's going to be the same hardware. There's a space in there not currently being used for the glucagon cartridge and for the drivetrain. And so the size of the islet will not change at all.
Good.
We'll just
add that
it's already
in.
It's just waiting. Right now there's just a little cover over the place where the glucagon will go. We had another barrier, which is we didn't have a stable glucagon. Well, Zealand Pharma has now produced a stable glucagon analog called dasiglucagon that's quite concentrated, 4 mg per mil. We have a little pre-filled cartridge of it that contains 1 ml of this concentrated glucagon, which is enough for 7 to 10 days.
So we're much closer, much closer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So that's going to be available. And really now it's just a matter of we're Beta Bionics is raising money to do this trial, and we are committed to get that trial going. It's going to be a longer trial. It's going to be 700 patients, we believe. Many of those patients have to go a full year because not only are we getting approval for the islet to use dasiglucagon in this case, but we're also getting approval for a new indication for dasiglucagon. So it is both a device and a drug trial, and so we need to have all this exposure, you know, chronic exposure, a year exposure to the dasiglucagon used in this way. So it's a big lift, a big effort, but we are excited about doing it because there's so much more value that we can get with the glucagon.
So a couple more questions. I feel like I could talk to you forever. So my first question is, so yesterday I was with my coworker and she's on a different system and she had had a hypoglycemic. She was like 50 with still kind of trending downwards. And so she treated. And then she felt as though she was rising too much. She went to 145 and then bolused again, which I guess ultimately wasn't recommended because then she went low again. So
right. The roller coaster.
Right.
She got on the roller coaster.
So what would happen on the islet? Like, are people able to just bolus when they want to?
No, they aren't. And that's, we think, a good thing. So if the suspension of the insulin was not enough to prevent hypoglycemia, people are still going to have to take carbs as they would otherwise. Although we do say that by the time you might be hypoglycemic, if suspension of insulin delivery wasn't enough, you should take less carbs to treat that low because the islet will have already suspended insulin and you're going to have less insulin on board. And if you do the traditional
15.
Advice of 15 grams, that's probably going to be too much.
Okay.
So people have to learn how much is appropriate, might be 5 grams of carbs just to get a nice soft landing. Or we do, of course, still have alarms, although we've reduced the number of alarms quite a bit with the islet. We want all the alarms to be actionable.
Yep.
So we have far fewer alarms than any of the other AID systems. But if they treat with carbs, one of the things we wanted to do is avoid getting on that roller coaster. So the islet actually is inhibited from dosing insulin for a sharp rise in glucose that occurs after a low. So if somebody is low and then they shoot up, we assume that that's because they overtreated their low with rapid-acting carbs. But those rapid-acting carbs will probably dissipate really quick. And so we don't want to respond to that with doses of insulin. So the islet is completely inhibited, the corrections controller is completely inhibited from dosing for a sharp rise in glucose for an hour after a low.
Even if they say a usual meal?
Well, it will dose for a meal. If they.
So they could trick it.
Well, you can't really trick it.
Oh.
We like to say you can't trick the islet, but you can confuse it. And this is really something important because the islet is learning on all those meal announcements. So if people are trying to get more insulin by announcing phantom carbs, carbs that aren't there, the islet learns on the 4 hours after one of those announcements. So if you announce fake carbs, it's going to learn you don't need very much insulin for a meal like that. And so the next time you announce a meal, it'll give you less. It'll be the exact opposite thing that you wanted to do. And likewise, if you're trying to get less insulin, so you call a less meal, but then you eat carbs, you know, you eat a usual meal worth of carbs, it will adapt upwards the amount of insulin it'll give you for the next less meal. So anytime you try to trick the islet, you're actually causing exactly the opposite thing that you wanted to occur. So what you really have to do with the islet, and this is a challenge for some people, is you really have to use it the way it's intended to be used. Don't try and trick it. Don't try and game the system.
Yeah.
Just let it do its thing.
Yeah.
And what we've seen is that people have a little bit of a hard time with that at first,
yeah.
But when they see that their glucose is good, they
then
learn
they
to trust
it.
And then there's this just weight that comes off of their shoulders and they think, oh, that's so great. I don't have to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And we have somebody on the islet right now who's one of these, you know, really sophisticated super users. And when she started on the islet, we said, this may be a challenge for you. She admitted that it would be. She wanted to do it anyway, wanted to try it. And she reported to us, she's like, I'm getting a very similar glucose that I got before, but I'm not having any hypo. And she said, it's because I'm not rage bolusing. You know, my glucose yeah. rises a little bit. I would announce fake carbs or I would give a bolus to get it down quicker.
Right.
I can't do that
yeah.
with the islet.
Good.
And I'm still getting the same average glucose, but my hypoglycemia has disappeared and it's making me realize I was the cause of that hypoglycemia. So that's why I say it's maybe a good thing that you can't
yeah.
jump in and do things.
That sounds great. But it will just be, you know, like a learning curve and then HCPs need to know that. And then I think it's important that, you know, we talk about this and I'm glad we discussed that.
Yeah. So we've worked really hard on the training materials and the training
Good.
Program for the islet. We think that's really, really important.
Yes.
And we think it takes about 90 minutes to 2 hours to train on the islet. And people say, well, why so long? Well, because, you know, that would be typical for another system, but this is so much more automated. It's because you need to do a little unlearning, a little deprogramming,
yeah.
because it's so different than anything people have been used to. They need to wrap their mind around that. They need to have some dialogue around what does it mean to use this system that really is this automated. And so a lot of the time is just spent thinking about these are the things you don't need to do anymore. You can't do anymore. There's no need to do them anymore. And that takes actually a lot of the time.
And they're going to start the CGM at the exact same time if they weren't already on.
That's right.
CGM.
We recommend that they start it the day before so they're already run in and they can just come in with the CGM running.
Good.
So that's part of the sort of pre-training checklist is making sure that they have a CGM, and we want them
Good.
To have gone through the, you know, the 2 hour warm up because we're still using G6 and have a CGM running at the time they come in.
Right.
They spend a couple hours training and then press Bionic and then they're off. And because it's so automated, there's very little additional that needs to be done. You know, with a traditional system, you're sort of retraining in a way every 3 months when they come in because you're figuring out, okay, do we need to change how we're announcing meals? Do we need to do an update on carb counting?
Or even change basal rates, correction factors.
Do we need to change
yeah.
the correction factor or the basal rate? And, you know, what is really the cause of this high that you're getting at this particular time? With the islet, it just does it.
Good. Perfect. So do you think there's an ideal candidate for the islet?
I think there's a lot of ideal candidates for the islet. What I would say is anybody who is not meeting goal for therapy with their current, whatever they're currently using, whether it be MDI, and we really hope that we're going to get a lot of people who will see the islet as something that they You know, they may have resisted using a pump or resisted using an AID system, but we really want them to think about the iLet now because it's a different value proposition. You know, they have to do a lot less work with this. It's not just a pump.
Yeah, it sounds like it's like a smart pump. You know, they call like a phone, like now a smartphone.
It's a bionic pancreas.
Yeah,
it's an iLet. So those people who are not meeting their goal for therapy, whether they're on MDI, whether they're on a non-automated pump, even if they're on a hybrid closed-loop pump, they're not meeting goal for therapy. We saw in the pivotal trial that on average, people coming from a hybrid closed-loop system, and in the trial it was 3/4 control IQ and roughly 1/4 670, 770G of that third that were using hybrid closed-loop, they saw an average reduction of 0.3 percentage points of their A1C.
Wow.
So those folks are potential candidates too. But we really don't see ourselves in competition with other hybrid closed-loop systems. We're complementary. We're different.
We think it's important to provide choice.
We want to expand the number of people who are getting access to automated insulin delivery.
Yes.
So folks who aren't meeting goal for therapy, definitely. But also people who are meeting goals for therapy, but would like to spend less time, less mental effort managing their diabetes, who would like to, are willing to let go a little bit, spend more time thinking about their life, the rest of their life, less time thinking about their diabetes. So I think those folks are also really good candidates. So, and then the only people who really aren't good candidates are people who are really invested in controlling every dose of insulin that they're getting and really can't let that go. And we would like them still to think about it.
Maybe to try it.
And because I think people aren't really sure whether they're going to be in that category, you know? They like the idea, but they're not really sure, and that's why it was really important to us to have a 90-day return policy for the iLet. So you can get an iLet, and if it's not the fit for you, you should give it back.
Okay.
We want to get it back so that we don't want you to be on something in pump jail for 4 years. We want you to be on the system that's right for you. We think that it will be the iLet for lots and lots of people, but if it's not for you, there's plenty of other great systems out there, and you should be on one of those.
So is it available now?
It is available now. We have FDA clearance. It's available now. We've launched. We have it on a number of people who are walking around ADA.
Okay. And what would somebody do? They would just ask their doctor?
They would ask their doctor. We're doing a very targeted launch for the first couple months, mainly around our sites for our clinical trials.
Okay.
Because those healthcare providers are already familiar with the iLet. And then a few additional sites, small numbers, to sort of allow them to get their feet wet, dip a toe in, prescribe a few iLets, see what it's like. And we have a very limited sales team, limited size sales team, and for training. So we're starting totally from ground zero. So we're going to go out in a targeted way initially, and then after a couple months, we plan to expand our sales team, expand the territories, and continue to build over time. And so people can go on our website now, they can express interest, we'll get back to them, and we'll tell them whether they're in a place where they can get an iLet right now, or whether we'll get back to them when we're able to expand to their area.
And do we expect there to be coverage just like any other automated insulin delivery system would have coverage, insurance coverage?
That's right. Initially, we're launching with DME pathway, and we're using the same code as for any insulin pump. And so it should be covered by essentially all commercial insurances. And so far that we found that to be the case. We also have submitted the paperwork to be covered by Medicare and Medicaid, but we couldn't do that until we got clearance from the FDA. We've told that it takes 60 to 90 days. So we're working on that. And we think that eventually we hope to be available. We're working on being available through the pharmacy pathway.
Great.
So more to come on that. But
okay. But
for right now, DME and commercial insurance.
Okay, and if people want to find out more, they go to betabionics.com?
That's right, betabionics.com.
Great. And so, Dr. Russell, I just want to thank you so much for your time and all this amazing information. Before we wrap up today, is there anything else that you want to tell our listeners, anything about diabetes or Beta Bionics or anything you want to share with our listeners?
I would like to say that it's been a long journey for us to get to this point, and we're all really, really excited. It's required a lot of work from a lot of people within Beta Bionics, within the academic community, people living with diabetes who volunteered for our trials, who've been so enthusiastic and encouraging of us along the way. It's really, we can't thank them enough, and we are really, really gratified to now be able to provide this to more people. You know, I'm just so excited that we're here, and I just want to thank everybody who helped us get here.
And we're happy to be part of your journey. Dexcom, right? You can't do it right now without the Dexcom.
That is absolutely right. We are so thankful that there
is... We're happy that we're together.
That there is a really accurate, convenient CGM device that can give us data that the iLet can use, and we really appreciate the partnership.
Thank you again, and thank you to all our listeners, and tune in next time for another episode of Real Time, Real Talk.